Cofield and Company, live at the Golden Nugget, Las Vegas.
Cofield here in Albuquerque. The guys are down at the Golden Nugget. Jeff Grammer is somewhere, I think, in Albuquerque. He covers New Mexico. Jeff, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We're good. Do you feel the pressure today? We played some... That was very sultry music, Ari. Nice job. Do you feel the pressure on Valentine's Day? It's a non-basketball night. Are you going to deliver?
I always deliver. I always
deliver.
Wow. That was sultry, too.
Wow.
That was sultry, too.
All right. Well, let me get real sultry here. I just got a question on Twitter, red or green. What does that mean?
So it's actually, no joke, it's an official state question, and it has to do with chili. And chili, so you know, I don't want you embarrassing yourself around Albuquerque today. Chili is definitely spelled C-H-I-L-E, and there's no I at the end of it. That's for the people east of here in Texas that put beans and meat in a big old pot. Chili here in New Mexico is chili with an E at the end, and there's red chili that's fantastic, and there's green chili that is even better in my mind.
Damn it.
And
okay,
you could also go Christmas and get them both.
Someone sent me, it's Christmas, wow, Tomasitas.
Yeah, oh yeah, go for it, man. That's one of the best. So it's been in, I mean, it's one of the best restaurants in Santa Fe forever. I love that place. And they do now, for about 2 years now, maybe a little less than 2 years, they have a restaurant open here in Albuquerque now, right off the interstate. And it's worth the visit, man.
But as I told you, I'm within walking distance of Ojos Locos. Is that the name of the place? It's basically Hooters with tacos.
Yeah. Ojos Locos. Ojos Locos.
Ojos Locos.
Don't say the J. Don't say the J.
Come on.
Ojos Locos.
Yeah, silent J there. Go with the H sound on the J there. Not silent, but it's an H
I'm
sound.
A true white.
Ojos Locos.
Do you like your Vegetas with chicken or steak?
Yes, yes. I'm going to order some guacamole. Why not? You don't take. By the way, Jeff, how many kids do you have?
I got two of them.
Okay. Do you take them to, however you say the name of that place, the Hooters?
Ojos Locos.
The Hooters
I have not taken. No, I have not taken either daughter to Ojos Locos.
I think you should. I think it sets a nice example.
I'll tell you what. I have been there, and I enjoy when I go there.
Yes, they had good food last time I was here. Very good food. All right, Jeff. Well, we joked with you last time you were on. Go ahead.
Well, I didn't realize they serve food, but okay.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, they're bringing the jokes, too.
He delivers
on Valentine's Day with the jokes,
yeah,
too.
That's true.
So last time we talked to you, probably, I don't know, like 25 days ago, you were knee-deep and dealing with the police department, not for your own problems, but police reports and kids suing the school. Things have calmed down, but what does that mean for the Lobos basketball team? Because they've been so wildly inconsistent in terms of the results of late.
Yeah, I mean, it's historically wildly inconsistent. It's not just like they're the worst team in the league just getting blown out every night. It's not like they're the best team, certainly, blowing teams out every night. They've been on both ends of blowouts, and seven of their past eight games have been decided by 21 or more points.
Wow.
The only exception in that eight-game span was a five-point loss at Fresno State, and they happened to be up by 17, but that was a game that they played without four starters. No Jaquan Lyle, Carlton Bragg, and J.J. Caldwell are both still out and will be tomorrow. And they were also without Vance Jackson. So no four starters. They lost the game by five. That was a good road game, though, actually. But the other seven in their last eight have all been decided by 21 or more points, and five of those are losses, and two of those are wins that were an average of 28-point wins.
Going through a stretch like that, like, what is your sense just being around the team of where their minds are?
It's crazy because, I mean, first of all, fans don't have a good sense of what to feel about the team, and I get that. They don't, even in good games, bad games, whatever. I usually have a little bit better feel for what they're going to do from game to game. But the players, no joke, they seem to approach every practice and every game the same. So I'm not getting a good feel of when they're going to, you know, lose by 30 and when they're going to win by 28 or 29. Obviously, the opponents have something to do with that. The two blowout wins were San Jose State and Wyoming in the pit. And but they did to those two teams what no other team in the league has done to those two teams, and just blew them out by 30 with ease. And it's weird because this is a team that still has talent, obviously, but they're in their own heads like Lobos have been for years. It seems to be they kind of have mental blocks that prevent them from reaching their full potential. And in those games where things are working, man, they can be really good. And they showed that the first half Tuesday night in San Diego. You know, they still look pretty good. It looked for a half like a kind of a what might have been this season sort of game. It was San Diego State, New Mexico, once again, competing at a pretty high level, and they went toe-to-toe with each other for a half. And then, obviously, the second half didn't go that way.
You referenced it earlier in an answer, but just kind of go down for people, where are they in terms of close to being at full strength? Like, where are they right now? What is the best they can hope for the rest of the way?
Yeah, so they the other kind of problem covering this team is UNM and the coaching staff and the administration won't give really hard, straight, definitive answers on the status of two players. But I think it's safe at this point to say starting point guard J.J. Caldwell's out for the season. He played 13 games, but he's missed the last, 28 games, the last 14 or 15 games. And his suspension his status is technically an indefinite suspension. He's not been charged with the crime. He's not been found guilty of a university policy violation. They are kind of waiting to see if the allegation from an ex-girlfriend about him putting his hands on her is true or not. And there is a misdemeanor battery allegation out there, but he has not been charged. The DA is reviewing the case. That's where his status stands. So even if he was found guilty of that, it would be a misdemeanor. How long that deserves to be either off the team or suspended, that's the other question, and university won't answer that. The other guy, Carlton Bragg, has now missed about half the season. First of all, he had an allegation against him from a girl who said she felt he was trying to rape her, but, again, never charged. Police didn't find evidence of that happening. The DA that's reviewing the case didn't find evidence to file an immediate charge. He was actually reinstated after that allegation came out, but then he got an aggravated DWI. He went through a checkpoint, did not blow in the breathalyzer, refused to blow on the breathalyzer, which is an automatic arrest here. So he's now off the team, but even that is sort of in question. Other people with DWIs missed a few games, but not the whole season. There have been other people at UNM, other players in other sports, and even on the basketball team that had DWIs and returned. So maybe he comes back. I don't think he will. The other two guys, though, Vance Jackson hurt his knee at Colorado State. That was the game before UNLV, and didn't play the first UNLV game with the Lobos. He's back now, 100% healthy. He's 6'9". He can help out down low, but he's also a great three-point shooter. He's back. And then Jaquan Lyle had a four-game suspension, two for a knee injury, and he was injured for two games and then two-game suspension. He rented an Airbnb, had a party where two people were shot. So there you go. There's the rundown. He's back as well, and the Lobos are about what they will be the rest of the way, in my mind, and that's with Jaquan Lyle and Vance Jackson both starting.
That is Jeff Grammer from the Albuquerque Journal. Follow him on Twitter, at Jeff Grammer. How much basketball have you actually written about this year?
Oh, man, it's unlike any other year, man. Like, and there's just no kind of sequence, no pattern to the coverage. Usually, you know, a game's coming up on a Tuesday or Wednesday. You know you're writing a preview, maybe a feature, break down some stats on this day, game story, the game night, and then, you know, some follow-ups. Like, we got, like, an hour before game time, and police are releasing the DWI video surveillance video. And, like, the morning of – actually, when I was in Las Vegas the last time, the morning of the UNLV game and the UFC fights later that night, there was, you know, the victim of one of the accusers, the J.J. Caldwell case, reached out to me, her attorney did, and wanted to release a statement on stuff. So it's just kind of breaking into a whole lot of any kind of pattern of being a college basketball writer, which is fine. That's part of the job. But this year has been unlike any other in terms of just not doing a whole lot of basketball coverage, unfortunately.
Jeff, let's finish on a couple of basketball points. One, UNLV crushed New Mexico the first time, especially in the second half, pulling away. What do you think happened in that game?
Well, I think the Lobos quit. I was just looking at it earlier today, and if you look at I like breaking down mm-hmm. games by quarters. Men's college basketball is the only game that still plays two halves. Every other level on men's and women's side, international, pro, everything plays by quarters. If you look at the final quarter, the final 10 minutes of that game, UNLV scored 35 points, and no team has scored more than 32 against the Lobos all year. So UNLV just kept going and going, and the Lobos, I think, pretty clearly quit by the end. And Jaquan Lyle, their leading scorer and their team captain, was front and center complaining to the refs and not getting back on defense with that. So I do think the 21-point differential there, probably a little misleading. I think it was a team that quit, and if the Lobos didn't quit, they still would have lost, but it certainly would have been a 21-point loss. But that said, the UNLV also got out in transition and scored on them, even when they were playing. And they did hit some threes, hit 10 of them that game. And the Lobos' three-point defense is poor, and their transition defense is a lot better than they showed that day in Las Vegas.
Yeah, I thought the body language at the end of the game was, I'll use the word, atrocious. And actually one of the guys I thought who I was kind of disappointed by in terms of his body language was Vontae Hendricks. But I know you just wrote about him. And what's your opinion of what he's done? This guy's a high-profile transfer. I mean, this team is so loaded. But what's your opinion of him?
He's a guy that needs to learn how to – what you saw is accurate. I mean, he has games where he's yelling at his teammates. He's throwing, you know, tamper tantrums to a certain extent. He's yelling at his coaches. He's played 14 games so far for the Lobos. He leads the team in technical fouls. He has 5 of them. He has been benched for the second half of 3 of those 14 games. And yet, he's also a guy that Tuesday night in San Diego had a career-high 20 points. He was diving for loose balls, fighting for rebounds. He was the only guy showing effort in the second half against the Aztecs. And he's a spark plug that really can help this team, kind of the future of this team in some respects. He's only a sophomore and plays with more energy than probably anybody in the league, but he just doesn't know how to control that energy and emotion sometimes. And I really like him. I just don't know if he's going to make it a whole season without, you know, getting – cost from a couple games or throwing a punch or something.
Jeff, we appreciate a couple minutes. We'll see you out at the pit tomorrow. Thanks, man.
I'll be there. Thanks, guys.
There you go. Jeff Grammer. I know he'll be there. Albuquerque Journal covering a really interesting story with Paul Weir and his band of transfers. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Tomorrow will be a tough spot, though, against an angry New Mexico team that right now has everyone, well, most of the guys back except for Caldwell and Bragg. All right, time to turn the page to a little bit of hockey. On the way back, we're going to talk to Ryan the Hockey Guy from Fox Sports Las Vegas and get into a couple of things. One, obviously, VGK's game last night, which was wild, and also the latest news on the AHL team coming to Henderson, a new arena on the way.
Join the conversation on Twitter at ESPN Las Vegas. You're listening to Cofield and Company, live at the Golden Nugget Las Vegas.
Catherine, awesome co-worker.
Catherine's great.
She's like your daughter.
Yeah, but I tell you a story. So all of a sudden, this older lady was sitting there with her husband. She's like, are they both with you? And I said, yes, they are. And then Catherine gives
you
me
are the, lying.
And Catherine says, will you shut up? she starts yelling at me because I play it off like, you know, we're going to bed together all every night, the three of us.
What in God's name just happened to Jeremy Roenick? Come on. Adam Hill's down at the Nugget. JBT there as well. So we check in on the NHL, on VGK. Ryan the Hockey Guy from Fox Sports Las Vegas is in studio. Ryan, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. All right, what do you make of Jeremy Roenick? First of all, the original crime.
Well, I think that if you're Jeremy Roenick, understanding that everything you're going to say is going to can and will be used against you. You just don't say anything that could get you into trouble. I think that it's pretty irresponsible for Roenick to go out there and say that, especially about his co-host. You say boys being boys, whatever, it doesn't really matter. But if you're NBC, I think that you've got to take some type of stance here. And they decided to do that with Jeremy. And I don't have Jeremy will be back with somebody relatively quickly because the job that he actually does in terms of breaking down games, he does a really good job with that, and there's going to be a network that will pick him up.
I think it's terrible he got fired. Adam, what do you think?
I'm consistent on this. I don't think anybody should ever be fired, and I don't think anybody in media should ever want anybody to be fired because it's only a matter of time before whatever you say crosses right. the line. So, I defend everyone on everything they say all the time. What I said about this was this is on her. And I don't want to put it on her to say, hey, you have to decide. It's tough to know what people are really feeling. I think she was put in a position of, hey, am I offended by this or am I not? And it's tough to really tell the truth about that sometimes because you do have friends involved, you have people in the business involved. So it becomes a really tough spot. If she was hurt by this, if she was offended by this, if this is not their actual, like, jokey relationship, That's a real problem that has to be addressed. No question about it.
What do you, but Adam, what, and it's for both of you guys, because we got to give the background. That was from a Barstool show called whatever it is, Spittin' Chicklets. And the part of that story was, hey, we go on vacation together.
Right.
Like both couples, Catherine Tappan and myself and my wife, we go on vacation together. This Ryan, this is honestly the kind of thing that could happen at Lotus. Like if you had a couple friend where, you know, there was a female colleague, I guess the difference would be, I was going to make the comparison like, hey, the female colleague's in studio and she gets to actually participate in the conversation. Tappan wasn't part of the conversation, but it's one of those weird, you know, relationship things off the air. I'm not saying we're sleeping together, but he goes on the air, and I think they cowered to public pressure, but you're right. He'll be back, and he'll probably be back with Barstool Sports.
Yeah, more than likely. I don't think that this is going to, in the long run, really hurt Jeremy Roenick too much. He's going to find some place that's going to pick him up, and he'll be back with somebody analyzing hockey, and then over time, he's probably going to work himself back to working NHL games for a major, major network, and it's going to be sooner than we realize.
Yep, that's where you nail it, because to me, this is one of those PR moves where he'll pay his penance for a year away, for about a year away from, it could be NBC. I could see him actually being back with NBC and the whole thing being smooth over. So let's talk about last night's game. First of all, I guess the negative side of it was great that they kept coming back and they won the game, but the goaltending right now and the defense right now, this is nuts. They've given up, 20 goals, I think, in regulation over the last five games?
Yeah, last night it was really defense that let them down, especially in the first two periods. You look at the Golden Knights, you look at some of the goals that were scored by the St. Louis Blues, especially Zach Sanford. He's all alone in front of the net, blown coverage in the defensive zone. As you go back and analyze it, I don't think it's a matter of this team not trying hard enough or not executing the way that they'd like to, not winning battles. It was simply confusion. And when you look at the fact that this team has had essentially two new systems. So they had their regular defense to start the year, and then they had the switch to the zone defense, and now they have a little bit of the tweaks that Pete DeBoer wants them to play with in the defensive zone. I think you just had some forwards that weren't necessarily sure where they were supposed to go in terms of coverage in certain situations, and that's why St. Louis had so many wide open looks, and it looked very easy for St. Louis to get some really good looks at the net. But the one thing I will say for the Golden Knights is if you look at the second period, you look at the third period, they got progressively better in that regard as the game went on, and they really limited what St. Louis did in the third period. That's the way they need to play in order to be successful.
Adam, what's your take on what's happening in front of the net? Because some of the same things happened against the Wild, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think they need to be tougher in front of the net. There's no question about it. And as Ryan said, whether it's personnel or its scheme and learning Pete DeBoer's system and making the changes that need to be made, something does have to improve. Something does have to get better. You can't just leave guys standing in the middle of the ice. And I thought after the Minnesota game, Pete DeBoer came out and said, hey, we were too soft in front of the net. And I think you saw that carry over into the first period yesterday. But there's also, you know, it's not necessarily a complete lack of effort. There was a shift where Derek Englund, Braden McNabb both, you know, got on the ice, block shots, they made big plays, but then later in the shift, the puck is still in the zone, and Derek Englund gets beat to the net, and he can't get around, and he's boxed out, and they give up a goal right in front of the net, an easy goal that you can't allow, but it wasn't because of lack of effort. It was, hey, they couldn't get the puck out of the zone. They tried everything they could, and then eventually they kind of wore down a little bit, got beaten to the net, and gave up that goal. So you need to make changes in a lot of ways. I mean, it's personnel, it's also scheme, it's also learning a new system. All of those things are part of it, but it just has to get better. It has to get fixed, or else this team is not going to get where they want to get.
Ryan, where are you on England?
You know, it's funny that you bring up that shift specifically, because he did a lot of really good things for a guy that hasn't necessarily played a meaningful game in quite a while. The block shots are important, but you know what? When you're killing a penalty, clearing the zone and getting off when your legs are too heavy, that's important too. And on that shift, Derek Englund did have two opportunities to clear the puck, wasn't able to do it, and then that leads to extended zone time. It leads to extra opportunities, extra chances for the St. Louis Blues, and it eventually ends up in the back of the net. Derek Englund only played about 10 minutes at even strength, 5-on-5. I don't know that it was necessarily the best game for Derek, but he does do some things incredibly well, like those block shots. I think if you're Pete DeBoer and you look at maybe how your defense defended on the penalty kill, Derek Englund comes back in. But to be honest with you, I like the mobility of Zach Whitecloud a little bit more. I feel like the Golden Knights were able to exit their zone a lot cleaner when Whitecloud was in over Derek Englund. And I think that's really where the Golden Knights game starts. In their own zone, clean zone exits, playing with speed through the neutral zone. I don't know that you can do that with Derek Englund on the ice.
You can find him on Twitter at Ryan Hockey Guy. Fox Sports Las Vegas is where Ryan Wallace is doing a daily show at 3 o'clock, and of course pre and post home and road for VGK games. I saw you had a poll question up. This one surprised me a little bit. Golden Knights fans are, or some, at least the ones that answered your poll question, are still very bullish on the chances of this team. Last I looked, because you were asking, hey, how far are they going to advance in the playoffs? Last I looked, I think it was at least 15% to the Stanley Cup. Were you surprised by those results?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I was. Now, I think that a lot of fans that voted that they'd get all the way there are doing it for two reasons. One, you just need to get in. And if you get in, anything can really happen. We've seen that over the course of the last couple of years with the Golden Knights. That being said, I also think that the fan base recognizes or believes there's going to be a trade for a defenseman. And if it's the right piece, it could be a piece that takes this team from inconsistent in their own zone to more consistent. And really, if that ends up happening, the Golden Knights are talented enough up front to do some damage if they get to the playoffs. I think there's not a major difference in playoff hockey, but there is something to be said for a team that is as big and heavy down low as the Golden Knights can be in playoff series. I still think they're the most talented team in the Pacific Division. You add a good defenseman to that roster, and then you would get Marc-Andre Fleury returning back to form. I think this team could be very dangerous in the playoffs, but I've also been waiting for that to happen all year long, and it hasn't to this point.
Let's talk about the big news yesterday in Henderson, that the AHL team is going to eventually be in Henderson after playing at the Orleans Arena. And Ryan, you can explain to the audience, I guess they're going to build out a new arena. It's going to hold 6,000. I think they've got 5,300 season ticket deposits already, and it's going to go basically on the site at the Henderson Pavilion. Like, they're going to get rid of the pavilion, and that's where a new arena is going to go, right there on Green Valley Parkway.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. That's all indications. City of Henderson had a great tweet the other day of the helmet being dropped on the Henderson Pavilion and it blowing up, and that's essentially where the Henderson remain to be named are going to play. But that all being said, I just you look at the players, you look at the guys that are going to be in the same situation in 2-3 years that Nick Waugh is in right now, and it bears to be said, Nick Waugh and Cody Glass have been recalled by the Golden Knights. They're going to join the Golden Knights. I would expect one, if not both, to play tomorrow. But it makes those transactions so much easier on the player. You've got guys that are traveling across the country. This is the 22nd time that Nick Waugh has had a transaction from the NHL to the AHL and back this season. And he hasn't been in a situation where he can set down any type of roots. Now, it's a lot different if he's just going from Summerlin to Henderson. So that's where this really benefits the players, and it really benefits how they perform night in and night out anytime they get recalled.
Ryan, good job, man. We appreciate it.
All right, thanks, guys.
There you go. Ryan the Hockey Guy, Ryan Wallace. You can hear him daily, 3 o'clock across the way on our sister station, Fox Sports Las Vegas, and, of course, with pre and post for all the home and road Vegas Golden Knights games. We got to get into the scene last night because it was nuts. There were all these celebrities all over the place. The UNLV football coach, Marcus Arroyo, got on the air horn. He went crazy. And there was also the Raider element there. Man, John Gruden did yeoman's work. People were really fired up to see the Raiders coach on the scene.
Hit up Cofield and Company on Facebook, like ESPN Las Vegas.
If you can dribble this basketball 15 times consecutively without missing, look at here, I'm going to give you $500. Now, I know you and your family could use $500. I can tell by looking at you that you could use a lot more than $500. 15 times.
Live from the Golden Nugget, Las Vegas. It's Cofield and Company.
Ready, go. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Oops! We didn't get to 15, Sean. What that means, Sean, is you've got to learn a hard, cruel fact of life. When you don't do the job right, you don't get paid.
Love.
Exciting and good feelings all around. That was an old WWF bit. Oh, crank it up. Come on. Come on, John. Sing it.
No shot.
Was that the Million Dollar
Man? One of the
best
shows of the 70s and 80s.
Let it flow.
What's that?
What is this? It floats back
to you. Ew, what?
Is this Love Boat?
All right, anyway. That was the voice of the Million Dollar Man.
All
Anyone
right.
know who he is? Yes,
Ted
is back. He is back in the news. We will hit it in the 5 o'clock hour. Ted DiBiase, great actor, but also may have taken that bit to real life. Just to explain what was going on there, had you guys ever seen that?
Oh yes.
What we just played?
I always wonder what the future of that child was. Like, where is he now, you know?
He brings this little kid up there on stage, offers him, and he's taking shots at the kid's like 8, taking shots at him for being poor. Says, dribble it 15 times. He gets to 14 and a half, and Ted DiBiase kicks the ball away. And the kid is, like, not in on the bit at all. He is so heartbroken that he just lost $500, and DiBiase just laughs at him.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't the clip a little bit longer? Like, doesn't he lecture the kid on why he sucked at dribbling the basketball, too?
Oh, yeah. He keeps going on and on. And the crowd is pissed.
Is
really pissed.
Was Virgil a part of that?
Virgil was right there. And apparently Virgil now, like, hates the Million Dollar Man. Yeah, Virgil was in his he had his vest on, he had the guns out, and he was sitting there like palming the basketball, giving it to the little guy.
I would highly recommend the blog Lonely Virgil. It's one of my favorite things on the internet. Virgil
man.
Has kind of spiraled.
Yep.
Poor guy.
Virgil basically they'll have, you know, these wrestling meet and greets all around the country, and Virgil's not invited, but he'll just bring his own table and set up outside and just try to siphon off everyone else's fame.
But then
it has not worked out for Virgil, which in a way, Virgil, kind of karma for what you did to that little kid. Now it's come back on you.
True. And but I mean, he goes one step further though, Steve. He goes up to people, takes pictures and then harasses them to pay.
You got to pay.
Like, you got a picture with me. Like, I didn't want a picture with you. He is like aggressive and out of control. Apparently, Million Dollar Man did not share the wealth and did not have a good retirement plan.
All right, stick with that. Aggressive and out of control. Is that what we saw at the VGK game last night on the air horn?
Oh, boy.
Aggressive and out of control.
I mean, that's a fair description. It was just a lunatic out of his mind just getting the crowd pumped. It was fantastic to watch.
Tell people what happened. Who was working the air horn?
That would be new UNLV football coach Marcus Arroyo, who did the pregame. He cranked the siren pregame. He was trying to live up to when TJ Altelberger did it last year.
Oh boy.
And TJO went a little over the top with the war scream followed by cranking it.
Yep.
I thought TJ's was a little different. I thought TJ's was more like giddy excitement. Like,
it was both.
Like, he had this maniacal smile on his face.
He did.
Like, he got a little too hyped about it. Arroyo was just anger and rage.
He was just football coach guy.
Yeah. I've seen him 3 times, Marcus Arroyo. One was the recruitment show, very well polished, well spoken. The other two, he's screaming in both instances.
Well, every time they take a shot at the new facility, like around recruits, they just have the whole coaching staff come in with the player, and they're just like,
yeah,
just like raging, and that's what he did on the air horn last night, or the siren.
Is that how you would do it though, if you got chosen?
Adam, I don't even think I could make the thing make noise.
I think you could, because I saw Scotty McCreary do it. Yeah, Scotty McCreary did it. You could do it.
It does look like there's a lot of resistance with the initial, like, rotation.
Oh, you got to get it going.
Yeah.
I beat Wayne Newton?
Yeah. He could barely get it going. He could barely get it going.
All right. Well,
anyways,
I did ask Altelberger about the battle now, because I think it's a full-blown battle. Who did it better?
Oh, for sure.
But he wasn't aware of Arroyo. He hadn't seen it yet. So my guess is that with the selfie stick, Mike Romala may get Altelberger on the Battle of the Siren. And two, what TJ is doing for Valentine's Day since he had to leave home early, which should be interesting. Because if you noticed, we'll play this for you later, Marvin Menzies, I forgot this a year ago, Marvin Menzies said that he took care of Valentine's Day well in advance, but on the day of, that Tammy, his wife, might get a little something-something.
Is that like delivery?
That's exactly how he said it. But no, he didn't say it like that. Like there was a gleam in his eye.
Yeah.
He was definitely laughed. Insinuating. We love Marvin's laugh.
it's a good laugh.
I have a question, though.
A little something-something, yeah.
I saw your tweet earlier today, Steve, so I'm going to pose this question to Adam. Yeah. Adam, how do you spell something-something?
I think S-U-M-T-I-N, S-U-M-T-I-N.
Okay. Steve went S-U-M-P.
Something? Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
I would look it up. I would look it up as I did.
Oh, so there's an official like spelling of something-something?
I put something-something. Yeah. You're right. There was no T, and it did come up in the Urban Dictionary, but I might be wrong.
I think it's legitimate.
Okay. I actually went there with no T or P.
S-U-M-I-N?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Something-something? I think there's got to be
a P, like there's
or
some kind of pop. There's some, yeah, something. Yeah.
You think there's something in the middle of something?
Yeah, there's something, a little something, something in there.
There was a little something going on in the stands. Mark Davis and John Gruden were hanging out. There were lots of empty seats. I expected free agent quarterbacks to be sitting there. Gruden just got swallowed up by fans, didn't he?
He did. There was like an Elizabeth Warren-style selfie line. People waiting. It went from where they sit, because Mark Davis sits in the same exact seat every game and wears, I think, the same shirt every game, right in the front row, right behind the net. And there was a line from their seat in the first row at the glass all the way up to the top of the concourse. It was insane, the lines that were forming between periods to go see them. And I talked to some people that were around John Gruden last night, and he apparently had a great time. He loved it. He thought the people that run the Jumbotron that decide what graphics go up were doing a great job.
They do. And yes. You know, I've argued with you in the past because for you it's normal, but the games I go to as a fan, I'm always blown away by all the promotions, the music. I think everything is awesome. So John Gruden apparently is with me, not you.
Yes, apparently. Why are you laughing,
Ben? Well, this is a nightmare. So, one, the reaction on the internet was great. Just dressing them down for the most part. My favorite one was Mark Davis looks like a rough draft of John Gruden. Like they're slowly turning into one another.
They kind of true.
They have such bad haircuts.
If Gruden ever combs his hair forward, it's over.
Yeah,
because he still has the middle part, so the hair drops off to the side. If he ever combs it forward, then you know there's a single white male going on.
Yeah, they're slowly morphing into one another. And the best part was Gruden's fanny pack, which was.
Oh,
really?
Really
solid. Oh, yeah, he had a fanny pack. And I wonder what he carries in the fanny pack.
Oh, he loves
other than
that.
The wallet, you know?
He loves that thing.
Oh, so you know this. You have the inside dope.
I don't really. I'll ask him about it next year.
Ask him what he keeps in there.
Yeah, I'll do that.
That's, you know, some Tums, Rolaids.
Next week we have Pritch in. We'll ask stuff. Pritch about, one, fanny packs, and then, two, his love of Merces.
Yeah, he does like them.
Well, but he doesn't like talking about him because I remember the last time. But a couple of things came back to me the other day when Pritch was in doing the role of the company. He started to talk about the process, and I was like, okay, that's it. We're out. I'm like, I'm not doing this again. Like, going back 5 years, he used to argue freaking tooth and nail over the process with the Sixers. And then it just hit me that he has the Merce, but he freaking hates if you bust on the Merce.
Yeah,
I'm all about any kind of bag at this point. I'm old, so
you just need to keep stuff around with you?
Yeah. Well, I want the real bag, like the new term for the bag, so I want that bag.
What's wrong with a backpack?
It's too big.
I have a backpack.
Okay. But like if you're going like out on the town, you need to keep something close to you, but you don't want to be like, around a backpack.
If you can't keep it in your pocket, it's too much stuff.
What about a hip pack? Like we have the fanny pack, but what about a hip pack?
Well, I feel like fanny packs are just the same. You just spin them around, right?
No, but I mean like a smaller satchel, probably about the size, I would say, of like a cantaloupe that you hang on your hip.
Would it be circle?
Yeah.
All right. I mean, that's fine. I feel like what are you carrying that you need that's more than your pocket?
5-hour energy, my inhaler. Let's see.
Phone charger.
Pocket.
Retainer case. Yeah, phone charger.
Roll of money.
I mean, all those things fit in a pocket.
Roll of quarters, yeah.
Potentially some fresh edibles to throw down so I calm down.
Okay.
Right.
Well,
now I guess we're getting into real territory.
Technically,
here.
You can keep all of those things in your pocket. I guess you just don't want puffy pockets.
No, because that's just embarrassing. What's more embarrassing, puffy pockets or a pack?
I've got very powerful thighs. There's not a lot of room in the pants.
Get bigger pants.
Very, very powerful.
Why do you wear such tight pants in the thigh?
Well, they were loose at one point. That's a problem.
Isn't Steve cargo short guy anyway with like 30 pockets?
Well, that exactly. And the regular pants don't have enough pockets. That's why I love cargo so much.
But it's also, it feels weird having that dangle. Like, you know, I've put stuff in the cargo pocket. Dangle. I don't like it dangling, you know? It's a weird thing.
I'm starting to get uneasy having that many electronics next to my crotch.
Okay.
I think something's going to happen.
They're not plugged in.
Yeah. Well, I got the little charger now. That thing's fired up. The phone's fired up. Okay. Just too many electronics.
All right, you've convinced
me. In that region. All right. We're 5 minutes away from RJ Bell. We are going to get into some of the festivities around the NBA All-Star Game. I love the celebrity game every year, but I got to tell you, as each year goes along, I have no idea who's in the game. Okay, the Mexican restaurant, what was the pronunciation, John, down here? Okay. It's Quavo, Quavo, Quavo. What is it?
Quavo.
See where I'm going?
Yeah.
I'm gonna probably blow it. You know, although we are gonna put RJ Bell to the test on this because I think he's gonna know less than me.
Join the conversation on Twitter at ESPN Las Vegas.
Von Tobel, you said yesterday that the NBA All-Star Game on Sunday was confusing in terms of the rules, and you didn't know how to handle things from a gambling standpoint, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Just from
any more clarity?
Like for me personally, or what we've seen, because I know like PointsBet out, you know, they're in Jersey and Iowa, they were pretty aggressive. They put up everything, side total, money line, a lot of props as well. Like from my perspective, it's like the scoring. How does that change? How does the effort change from the whole format in terms of the tribute to Kobe Bryant and resetting the scores? So on my end, I haven't really received any clarity in terms of how I want to bet it. But PointsBet was pretty aggressive when a lot of operators weren't, and they decided to put up almost everything.
RJ Bell is with us at RJ in Vegas, pregame.com. RJ, have you heard any buzz around the All-Star game on Sunday and any confusion about the rules?
Well, I think quantifying the fourth quarter variation is the key here, right? So
right. It's
whatever the score is at the end of the third quarter, you add 24 points to the leading team, and if they're tied, it'd be to both teams, and whoever gets to that score. So let's just say it's 100-100, just unrealistically, it'd be that low scoring, but let's say that to keep it simple. Then it will be the fourth quarter is untimed, and it's a race to 24, right? In this case, 124 points. Now, if the team's winning 100-90, it's going to be a race to 124. The team winning has to score 24 points. The team losing has to score 34 points, right, plus 10.
Right.
Fezzik estimates that will downturn or decrease the number of points in the fourth quarter by 25 points than if it was just a time quarter. Okay. So really, with a total of 300, you would say, okay, if this were a normal game, normal rules, it should be 325. Last year's total, which was normal rules for the same style of game with LeBron and Giannis, the total was 300. So shockingly, they made this fourth quarter change, which should decrease scoring by 25 points or so, and the total was still the exact same as last year, though last year they scored 340-plus, so they would have moved the total up some from 300, but I think it's a pure value play on the under.
Okay. How do you think casual bettors are going to react to this?
I think they're going to be very confused.
Because I am.
I mean, this is the kind of thing Fezzik does exceptionally well, right? And it goes to the old adage, which is the more complexity there is, the bigger advantage it is to the best bettors. I love complexity because, in theory, a good handicapper should be able to quantify it and sift through it more efficiently. And in poker, for example, the analogy I always use is if I'm playing no limit, full ring table, nine players, eight players, my chance of winning against a Phil Ivey is so much higher, though it's not high at all. It's so much higher if I'm playing heads up against him in a game that, like, you know, some game I'm not as familiar with. That now it's just our pure poker skill is going to be the key, as opposed to kind of memorizing certain standard moves that you're going to make in a hold'em game. So betting an NFL game normally, there's a lot of, hey, take the home dog. Don't, you know, if the line moves too much, don't look to play out the steam. There's all these rules that help make decisions for you that you eliminate those easy decisions when the rules change like this. So to me, it's an opportunity for the best bettors.
I can't imagine a guy like you, a guy like Fez, sees any value in any of the competitions on Saturday, the dunk contest, the three-point shooting, the All-Star Skills Challenge. Is there anything there?
I think especially with the dunk, with the, you know, and I don't even know exactly how the rules have varied year to year, but with the scoring from, you know, out, you know, the whole scoring element feels pretty hard to quantify, right? So I actually like an MVP bet. If I had to bet one bet of the entire All-Star weekend, it might be the under, half a unit on the under for the game and half a unit on at 6-1, I've seen. You might even get better, is Anthony Davis to win the MVP. Because I believe LeBron is obviously, he's the captain. He's the, you know, leader of the team. And I think he's going to want to feed his guy. Bill Simmons kind of made that point for the whole season, saying maybe AD is a good bet for the MVP just because LeBron's going to try to get him, you know, feeling good, jacked up. I think for one game, it's a lot easier. Think about the goodwill LeBron gets if he puts AD in a situation to get the MVP. Yeah, small thing, but I see him being motivated. It's 6-1. I like it.
I don't think anybody, wins the MVP, RJ. I think they award it to Kobe.
Oh, that's interesting. But I don't – huh. Is that even viable?
They're changing the rules of the game. They might as well throw the award to him.
Boy, you've gotten – I wonder how long it'd take before tragic death to irritate Adam.
I'm not irritated. I'm not irritated. I'm just saying.
By the way, what might irritate Adam even more is the fact that there's rumors that Zach LaVine might be a late entrant into the slam dunk contest.
Oh, I mean, what? I don't know why exactly that would irritate him, but I can believe it.
Wow.
It's a rules thing.
RJ Bell's with us, pregame.com, straight out of Vegas, 5 days a week, every day, over on 920 The Game and nationally on Fox Sports National. So I want to tie the NFL and the futures market to the NBA in this way. Remember a couple of years ago when LeBron was deciding where he was going to go? That was a really aggressive market based on a lot of rumors, right? Hey, was LeBron going to be a Sixer? Was he going to land with the Lakers, the Clippers? Where was he going to go? Are you guys looking at the football future odds and trying to calculate where certain quarterbacks may land?
Yeah, but here's the question. Other than Breeze signing or retiring, who's the quarterback that really moves the needle?
Brady.
Does he?
On certain teams, I think he might, but that's a good you answered. Does he?
I don't think so. I mean, okay. We have, and again, Fezzik leading the way with this, we have Brady ranked about as the 20th best quarterback in the NFL for next year, and that takes into account the aging that's coming in the next season. Does the 20th best quarterback move the needle? Yeah, if it's the 30th best quarterback they're replacing, but right. Usually that's going to be a really bad team. So, I mean, does Brady really – let's say the Colts are the dream situation, right, where that's probably the best team he could – that or Tennessee.
Right.
Now, I really would rather – for one season, would you rather have Ryan Tannehill or Tom Brady right now?
Brady slightly.
I think Tannehill.
Okay.
Slightly. Now, maybe come playoff time – it's Brady a little, but then he's still, you know, almost 4 months older at that point and beat up through the season. Right? We've seen Brady for years now drop off late in the year, typically, not always, but generally. And the 1 year he didn't was the Deflategate year when he didn't play the first four games. And thus, game 16 was really game 12 for him. So, to me, if Tannehill leaves Tennessee, now that's a real down arrow for Tennessee, right? Otherwise, you know, let's just say Brady into Indianapolis. Where's Brissett rank right now, right? Probably below 24 or 20, certainly below 20. So I could see a couple, you know, what's Brissett, maybe 26, 27?
Sure.
All right, so I see a little upgrade for the Colts. Otherwise, I don't really see him moving the needle. Now, with New England, if he leaves... now that's a real down arrow, I think. But also, does Belichick really let him go without having a plan? What I find really interesting, the two I find interesting, and you guys can tell me if you agree, I think Tannehill to New England would be fascinating. A mobile quarterback, you know, with Belichick, or Cam Newton to New England.
So what would you do? You would expect the odds to go backwards a little bit if one of those guys is a quarterback and then you jump on it?
Boy, that's interesting. If Cam Newton went to New England, what would the odds do? My sense is the market overvalues Brady right now and would probably downgrade the Pats a little bit, but I actually think that would probably be a mistake.
How about my philosophy of Garoppolo to New England?
Now, that's an interesting question. I don't think Garoppolo is that much better than Brady right now. I think Garoppolo is like around 18 or 17. Now, Fezzik has – listen, I'm not going to judge Fezzik in his different interests, but he really likes Jimmy G, like suspiciously. So,
still?
You know, he's got him like 12 or 13. Listen, Shanahan knows more about Jimmy G than anyone, and Shanahan told us he doesn't trust him in his play calling. I think we've seen that throughout almost the entire season, especially in the playoffs. If you guys don't mind, I've got a fun, you know, as we hit the end of this, I got a fun little talk show 101, but it's a good one, hypothetical for you. You want one?
Yes, do it.
All right. What team would Kawhi Leonard have the better chance to win a title on? In this universe, on the Clippers, as he is, or in this alternative universe, assuming we're in the simulation, and that one has Toronto retaining Kawhi, and literally it would not have been a major problem to keep every other player they have on their team. They had the salary cap rule or salary cap room to have Kawhi and the team they have. Which team gives Kawhi the better chance to win a title?
Go ahead, guys.
Are they still in the Eastern Conference?
Yeah, everything else is the same.
So I would go Toronto. You can get through the East.
It's Toronto.
I mean, there's really agreement on that. Fezzik says Toronto would be plus 180, in his opinion, which is far higher than anyone now, right? Lakers are like plus 280, 3-1 for Milwaukee, and 3.5-1 for the Clippers. But it's fascinating to think all the rigmarole that they went through or Kawhi went through to try to get to his ideal spot. And if he would have just stayed in Toronto, all things equal, and you never know for sure, but they'd have the better team and be a bigger favorite.
I don't think he was going to the Clippers to find a better place to win the title. It was a better place to live.
Oh, come on. You don't think he was he demanded a trade, specific trades and specific moves? Wasn't about the title?
To go home to L.A.
Oh, come on. You think if Toronto had the better chance to win the title, he would have stayed in Toronto probably.
They already won the title.
Oh, so one's enough?
No, but the move to L.A., he wants to win a title, but he mostly wanted to go home.
All right. Maybe you – I mean, you know, I mean, I don't see you applying for newspapers in the small town Michigan, but okay, maybe.
No, I'm home's Vegas now.
RJ, have a great weekend, man. We appreciate it.
You guys hung over.
No, not at all. Why? No, not enough energy for you? We were screaming and yelling earlier. We'll try to bring it in the 5 o'clock hour.
I mean, I'm not judging. I'm just saying.
Sound the judging.
All right, RJ. We'll see you. There you go, RJ Bell, RJ in Vegas up on Twitter. 5 o'clock hours on the way. We're going to talk about, one of the coaches in the XFL had no idea what the hell was going on. Shocker, it was a guy who was a little bit older and was a coach in the National Football League. And my God, Cody Bellinger freaking brought it. I don't want to hear anything else from Astros fans because players around baseball are pissed.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews.